אין בעבר ובהווה. לזכר נשמת פנחס בן ראובן הכהן זר. So if you look at the bottom of the page, there's a halacha quoted from the Rambam, which is based on a Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin. And it's a famous halacha, and it says, the Rambam said, the reason the language of the Rambam is a little bit more simple and easy to understand, even than the Mishnah. Hagonev kli sharet min hamikdash. That's one case. Kli sharet is a replaceable vessel. It's not a vessel that has special kedusha, but a vessel that is used in the performance of other things in the Beit HaMikdash. So Hagonev kli sharet min hamikdash. Why this became a subject, an independent subject, is not clear. But I guess it was easier to steal kli sharet than to steal the Mizbeach, for example. So there were a lot of them around. There was no limit on the number of spoons that you could have to take out this from here and put it there. So, and then Hamikalel Bekosein, Hamikalel, somebody who is curses. And then Haboel Aramit, someone who has sexual relation with an Aramaic woman. Ein Beit Din Nizkakim Lahem. You don't have to wait to bring them to trial, right? You don't have to have a regular procedure. Ein Beit Din Nizkakim Lahem. The Beit Din, you don't need the Beit Din in order to deal with these people. Ela Hakana Impog Imbahem. Ela Hakana Impog Imbahem. Kanaim. I don't know. It's very hard to define these words, but in general, it means a person sees a certain kind of injustice being done, and says to himself, "This injustice demands an immediate response," and the halacha has validated that. That if you see somebody stealing a kli sharet from the Beit HaMikdash, you don't do the regular procedure, which is to have edim witnesses, two kosher edim, warn the person who is stealing that he will be punished, and that they will give witness to that, and then go to the Beit Din and have the Beit Din approve of his, all of that. It's like very procedurally heavy. It'll take a long time. I mean, when we learn the Gemara, it says, the Eidim come and they say, Reuven killed Shimon, so okay, so you kill Reuven. But it doesn't tell you how difficult it is to get two Eidim to come and to say, Reuven killed Shimon. So that's what Kana'im Pogimbo are. You can make a decision on your own. You can make a decision. And that decision is that you can't wait. You can't wait for due process. Due process would just mess everything up, and these people would get off scot-free. So kana'im pog imbo is another way of saying no due process. You don't have to bring him to court. You don't have to have the witnesses give witness. You don't have to do all of those things, but it is enough. It is enough if you see this transgression being done, to then go and to act upon it and to kill the people who are doing this transgression. Now this exactly is the story of Pinchas. But the story of Pinchas has more details that we have to kind of relate to. So let's look at the story now. Vayeshev Yisrael, I'm going to try to go through the entire Rashi, but we won't be able to deal with all the problems that the Rashi deals with, but we'll try. Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim. Rashi said b'shitim kach shema. I do know because there's a Hebrew word hiding in shitim, which might have a different meaning, but Rashi says, no, Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim, they were dwelling there, B'nei Yisrael. You have to remember, this is the end of the parasha of Balak. This is the end of the parasha where Balak tried unsuccessfully to curse B'nei Yisrael. Right? An interesting story in itself. Right? Vayachel ha'am liznot et benot Moab. Liznot et benot Moab, Rashi says, al yidei atzad bil'am kide'ita v'chelek. Right in the Gemara, Chelek is the name of the last parak of Sanhedrin. And there, the Gemara says that it was Bil'am who gave this. He said, well, I can't get them this way, we'll get them that way. We'll send the young women from Moab, we'll send the young women to entice the men of Israel and to get them to serve idolatry. And this is in the next pasuk, but tikrena la'am, lizivchei Elohim, vayochal ha'am, vayishtachu le'elohim. So the structure of this pasuk is difficult, but it says somehow that they were sacrificers and they were eaters and they were bowers. And Rashi says, "Vayishtachavu le'elohim kishetakaf yitzro alav v'amar lo hishamali." The men went a little wild and they wanted to have relations with a particular Moabite woman who was dancing around. V'hi motzi'a lo dmut pa'or, and she took out a figure of pa'or, it's the name of the idol, mi'cheka, from her breast, va'omeret lo hishtachave lazeh, she says to him, hishtachave lazeh. It was Rashi is trying to explain to us how this became a matter of avodah zarah, of idolatry. Why wasn't it just, non-acceptable sexual relations? Right? So he says from the word vayishtachavu le'elohim, that teaches you that was what was really going on. Pasuk gimel vayitzamed Yisrael baal pa'or, vayicharaf Hashem Yisrael, vayitzamed. The word vayitzamed means to cleave to something. It's like davek, except dvekut is usually used in a positive spiritual way. Right? The Rambam liked the word davek, dvekut. Here it says vayitzamed, I guess to distinguish. Right? Dvekut is good and vayitzamed is not good. Vayitzamed Yisrael Baal Pa'or is the name of the idol. Vayichar af Hashem Yisrael, and Hashem got angry at Yisrael. Right? Vayichar af Hashem Yisrael. It's hard to know exactly what that means. You see the Rashi, Vayichar af Hashem Yisrael, Shalach Bahem Magefa. Right? Rashi is also against anthropomorphisms, as you know. Right? So it sounds like the Pasuk says, Vayichar af Hashem Yisrael, that God was angry, that you could perceive God's anger. And that's why the Pasuk says that God was angry. But Rashi says, no, it wasn't that way. It wasn't that you could perceive God's anger, but what happened was the anger was represented by the magefa. The magefa being the plague that came upon B'nai Yisrael at that time. Ichar af Hashem Yisrael shalach b'hem magefa. Pasuk dalet. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe kach et kol rashei ha'am v'oka otam l'Hashem neged Hashemesh v'yashov charon af Hashem b'Yisrael. So without Moshe Rabbeinu intervening here, at least it's not in the Pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu did not exactly intervene, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kach et kol Rashei Ha'am, the important people, right, the leaders, Hoka otam l'Hashem neged Hashemesh. That you have to put them facing the sun. V'yeshov charot af Hashem Yisrael. So it's and then God's anger will subside, will retract, will be less intense. It's not so clear. So the Rashi says, "Kacha kol Rashei ha'am." Lishpot et ha'ovdim lipa'or. Now the important word here in Rashi is the word lishpot. In other words, according to Rashi, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu is, we need mishpat. We need mishpat. Now you know that mishpat has been a topic that Moshe Rabbeinu had to deal with over time, quite at length, when Yitro, remember Yitro came to Bnei Yisrael, and Yitro said that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not going to be able to carry on this way. You're not going to be the only responsible justice in Yisrael, but you have to have others who help you. Moshe Rabbeinu retold that story in the beginning of Dvarim because it was very important. It was a very important story because what it indicated was that there could be judgment in Yisrael even after Moshe Rabbeinu died. And that was what made it possible for Am Yisrael to continue to exist. Because if Bnei Yisrael, as I've mentioned several times, if Bnei Yisrael thought that they needed Moshe Rabbeinu to paskin a shaila, that they could never find out if a chicken was kosher unless Moshe Rabbeinu told them that it was kosher, that would be the end of Am Yisrael. Or it certainly would be the end of eating chickens. But you have to understand that even though this is not clearly stated in the Torah and not clearly stated in Chazal, there's no doubt that there was some way of overcoming the limiting aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu was so great that he couldn't be replaced. And if you can't replace the leadership, you can't go on, it seems to me. So that the very idea that Moshe Rabbeinu, not that he appointed Yoshua to follow him, he could appoint anybody to follow him, but that the people accepted the appointment, that they were willing to continue to go on as though Moshe Rabbeinu was still with them, that was extremely remarkable. You wanted to say something? No? Okay. So this is what he said. Kachad Rashi Amzerachi Shuashi said, Shoftim, Hokautam al Hashem Neged Hashem. Rashi says, Hokautam. Hokautam is a different subject. He says, Eta Ovdim. The Ovdim are the ones who served idolatry. The Hoka. Rashi says, He Tliya. Right, this is what the Gemara says, that what they actually did, the way they actually killed them, was to hang them. Kamosho et sinu b'bnei Sha'ul u'okatem l'Hashem. There's another pasuk which uses the same word. V'shem t'liyam foreshet b'avodah zarah b'skila v'kol ha'niskalim nitalim. That he puts it together with the halacha. Right? He says it's halachically accurate because even though the Gemara says about Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Niskalim, but Kol HaNiskalim Nitalim. So the word Hoka that's used here in the Pasuk, even it's a little kind of complicated, is okay. It's the okay word. It's the okay word to use. And then Bayashov Charon Af Hashem B'Yisrael, and then God will be less angry. Now, if you look again at the Rashi, Neged HaShemesh, Neged HaShemesh, I mean, it's not clear why you have to put them facing the sun, Lain Kol, so they could all see. O Medrash Agadah, HaShemesh Modiya Et HaChotim. The Shemesh sort of identifies the sinners. Anan Nikpal Michenegdo Vachama Zorachat Alav. The Anan sort of like points or covers up or uncovers, and then the sun shines down on the guy who's guilty, and you can whack him. You whack the guy who is guilty. So I think you have to remember that word, the shpot et ha'ovdim lepa'or. Pasuk hey, Sukei v'yomer Moshe shoftei Yisrael, hirgu ish anashim anitzmadim lebal pa'or. So it's as though the Torah read Rashi. Right, that's, you know, that's how it turns out. Rashi often does that, but when you read the Torah with Rashi, it sounds like Rashi is preempting what it says in the Torah. Like why did Rashi have to say this? But el shoftei Yisrael hirgu ish anashav anitzvadim lebal paor. Now ish anashav, what's the exact directive that God gives? Hirgu ish anashav Rashi. Every one of the Dayanim, remember the Dayanim that were appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu in the story of Yitro, each one of them kills two sinners. With Dayanei Yisrael Shmona Ribo, and how many were there? Ribo is 10,000. Shmona Ribo is, I guess, 80,000. Vishmonat Alafim, 88,000. So how many were killed? 88,000 times two. Because each one of them killed two Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Kideita v'Sanhedrin. Kideita v'Sanhedrin, as the Gemara explains. So here the Pasuk says quite clearly, Vayomer Moshe el Shoftei Yisrael. Pasuk Vav, Hinei Ish v'Bnei. Now we have a new story. Right up to now, we had that story, and Moshe Rabbeinu was actively involved. Moshe Rabbeinu was directing the Shoftim to kill the people who had transgressed, to wipe out idolatry, to reduce the anger that God expressed towards Bnei Yisrael. And now we have a story. V'nei ish mi'bnei Yisrael ba, v'krev el achiv el et ha'midyanit, l'nei Moshe, l'nei kol adat Bnei Yisrael, v'eim bochim. So now the story is that Moshe Rabbeinu becomes transfixed. He's not able to act. He's not able to... Somebody did something. Did he do something different that was done before? Here the Rashi says, Hinei ish v'bnei Yisrael ba, nitkabtzu shifto shel Shimon etzel Zimri, sheya nesi shelahem. So Zimri, there's this guy Zimri, who's the Nasi of Shimon. Shimon is a small and usually insignificant tribe of Israel that on the map was located at the south. You know, like Yerushalayim, you see the map? Do you see it? Like, let's say we had advanced electronic equipment, so you'd all see the map, but all you have to do really is just close your eyes and imagine the map of Israel. The middle of the map of Israel is more or less Yerushalayim. And from Yerushalayim in south is the area that was controlled by Yehuda. Yehuda, very big area, very big tribe, very successful in whatever they did. And they managed almost to drive the idolatry out of Eretz Yisrael, almost. And to the south, all the way to the south, at the bottom, I don't know where that was exactly, but I mean, I don't know if it was Be'er Sheva, or probably further south than Be'er Sheva, was the tribe of Shimon. How come they became... they were sent down there. I mean, I don't understand, but that's where they were. And so there was an ish v'bnei Yisrael, Rashi says, from Shimon. And ish doesn't mean nobody, but ish means somebody, because he was a nasi. He was the principal personality in the tribe of the Shimon. Ba, he comes along, v'yakrev elechav et ha-midyanit. So he somehow had relations with a Midianite woman. And then, Le'inei Moshe, le'inei kol adat b'nei. So why is this different than what was going on all the time? I mean, this is what everybody was doing. Right? Everybody was doing this. So he did it. So what? V'heima bochim petach ol moed. Now bochim is a reaction of a person who doesn't know what to do. B'chia is not a strong, positive act. B'chia is the opposite. It's, I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know how to absorb it. And therefore, I am crying. Rashi says, Et HaMidyanit Kazvi Matzur. Rashi tells you the name because it's at the beginning of the next parasha. Leinei Moshe. Amrulo Moshe. Zo Asura Omuteret. Imtom Asura. Bat Yidro Mi Heitira Lecha V'chulei Kedeita Atam. So Rashi has to figure out what was going on that they were crying about. What was it that was so disastrous to the people of Israel? What happened? It was the same thing that was going on before. Somebody decided to have sexual relations with a Midianite woman. I mean, why get excited about that? What?
Wasn't it like Prohesia? And it seemed
to be Prohesia for everybody because they were able to grab them and kill them. Somehow they knew. I mean, you could say whatever you want, but why would that cause them to cry? Why would they be incapable of acting?
That was sort of like flaunting in their face.
Oh, yeah, but that's not precise enough for me. You know, people, they're different kinds of people. Some people, you know, can't put up with that, and some people can. So what does it say? Hema bochim. Hema bochim. Look at Rashi. I mean, you have to understand, Rashi is not only telling you how it was, but he's telling you also what his own problem is with the text, with the Chumash. So he says, Hema bochim, Hema bochim. Nit alma mimenu halacha. He forgot. Imagine that. You say that about Moshe Rabbeinu. Nit alma mimenu halacha. I mean, it's in the Gemara. But gee, after all, kol haboel aramit kana impo gimbo. That's what we saw at the beginning. That there's halacha. If somebody does what he was doing, just go and kill him. I mean, what's the question, right? Ga'ul kulam bivchiya. So what were they crying about? They were crying about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to lead them, to direct them, to move them in the right direction. Be'egel amad Moshe k'neged shishim ribo. Says when the egel took place, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to take a stand against 600,000. Shine'emar v'yitchan ad asher dak. That's what he did. He destroyed the egel as a hapki kan rafu yadav, and here his arms were weak. Elakadeshi yavo pinchas v'yitol et hara'uilo. So Rashi asked that as a question. How could it be that the person who, I don't mean Abi, it's a good question. How could it be that the person who stood for B'nai Yisrael at the Chayta Egel against 600,000 and managed to save them and to kill the ones who had to be killed, how come here he is unable to act? Rashi asks. Right? So then he says, Rashi is wonderful, Rashi, I think. He says, Be'egel amad Moshe k'neged shishim ribo sh'ne'emar v'kan rafu yadav ela k'dei sh'yavo pinchas v'yitol et ha'ra'ui lo. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that they had to, that Pinchas had to show up. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu acted as though he didn't know what to do, even though I'm sure he did know what to do, he knew what the halacha was, but he acted as though he didn't know what to do because he wanted Pinchas to do it. Pasuk Zayin.
Are you saying it's Amman in Halacha?
Sicha?
It's Amman in Halacha or not?
Oh, that's what Rashi says at the beginning.
Yeah,
and then at the end he says it just looked like Nitalma Mimenu Halacha.
Perhaps
you're right, Gideon. You're right. Rashi is contradicting himself to some extent.
Oh, couldn't it be that perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him forget that halacha, Chidesha.
Okay, what's the difference? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him forget it, or he just forgot it? I mean, it's the same.
Well, it's better than he pretended to forget.
No, I didn't say. Nobody said he pretended.
Why is it better?
It's the same. I mean, he forgot the halacha, but later on. No, later on, the Moshe Rabbeinu did it on purpose, according to the Rashi. Okay, so what's so there are two opinions. It's not so strange in Rashi.
But Moshe later says, "I'm too old." No, he's 40 years older now than he was back then, and he says, "Point blank, I can't do it anymore." So he explains this also.
I mean, he couldn't kill him.
He couldn't do it. Couldn't kill him for sure.
He did it insistent.
No, he just can't handle it anymore. I can't go out. Give me job.
Okay. Now, Vayar Pasuk Zayin. Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Vayakom, he got up. Mitocha Eidai came out. He appeared. Vayikach Romach Biyado, and he took a Romach. Romach is what? A spear. Right. Good. A spear. Vayar Pinchas. Rama said, "V'nisgar halacha." Continue the previous thought in Rashi. Rashi said, "Moshe Rabbeinu forgot the halacha. Pinchas remembered the halacha." Amar lo le Moshe, I said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Mikublani mimcha, haboel aramit kanaim pogimbo." You taught us this halacha. You taught us what we're supposed to do in this case. We're supposed to kill him. Amarlo Karyana de Igarta Ihu Lahave Parvanka Yad Laikach Romach Viado. So Yeshua said to Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Rashi, Yeshua says to Moshe Rabbeinu, what?
Pinchas.
Pinchas said, good, so everybody's listening. Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you taught us this halacha. So what's the continuation? Like Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you just standing there? Why did you do something? Right? You taught us this halacha. Right? Boilis haramis, kadnoim, pogimbo. This is like a well-known halacha. It appears in the Mishnah, and later on appears in the Rambam. So what is Moshe Rabbeinu's response? Unbelievable response. Karyana de Igarta, the one who reads the scroll, the letter, he's the one who should be the emissary. Right? Since you announced the halacha, you, Pinchas, have announced this halacha now, so you go carry it out. I mean, you have the obligation. Somehow, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't think that he has the obligation. I mean, Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you go and do it. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, I don't think I have to do it. I think the person who brought it up, he should do it. That's you. That's you, Pinchas. It's a kind of strange position. I mean, I have to go into the question of who is Pinchas and what makes him important, that how can you compare him to Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, the whole thing doesn't make that much sense. But we go on. Pasuk Chet. Vayavo achar ish Yisrael el akuba, vayidkor et shnehem. He speared the both of them, et ish Yisrael et aisha al kovata, vateyatzar amageifa ma'al b'nei Yisrael. Right, so Pinchas did what he did, and then somehow the anger of God, the mageifa, the pestilence, was called God's anger. And that became appeased, and Ve'atei Asara Magifa, the last pasuk in this section, Vayu Metim Magifa Arba'a Ve'esrim Aleph. Right, 24,000 died in the Magifa, Charon Af Hashem, and this, how is the Magifa stopped? Magifa was stopped by Pinchas. What did Pinchas do? He speared him, he speared her, they both died. And he saved the day. He, Pinchas, saved the day. Okay, let's go on.
So, in addition to the 24,000, there was 160,000 killed.
176.
these 24,000 were the second anger of God about Zimri. It says in Pasuk Yud, Vaydeber Hashem al Moshe Lehmor, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Hashivit Chamati me'al b'nei Yisrael, B'kano et kinati b'tocham, V'lo chiliti et b'nei Yisrael v'kinati. Here Rashi says something very important, I mean, always very important, but Rashi says, Vayar Pinchas, you see the Rashi, Pasuk Zayin, the first wide line, Ra'a ma'aseh v'nizkar halacha. He saw what was going on, and he remembered the halacha. No, I'm sorry, I don't want that. Pinchas ben Elazar, Pasuk Yud Aleph. The fourth wide line, I'm sorry. The fourth wide line, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Lefisha yu ha-shvatim mivazim oto. The various tribes of Israel would say insulting things about Pinchas, mivazim oto. Re'etem ben Puti zeh. Did you see Puti? Puti, well, Pinchas was the son of Elazar, and his mother was the daughter of Yitro. So when Yitro is Puti, so what they said was, they said, Areitem ben Puti zeh, shepitem avi imo agalim labodazara. I mean, what's the connection? What is the relevance? What do they have to, what are they talking about? According to Rashi, the question you might ask is, in the Pasuk, we know who Pinchas is, and we know that there's a rule in the Tanakh, which may not be 100% correct. I can't tell you. I don't have that kind of memory. But it's often true that the first time a person is mentioned in a book of the Tanakh, he's mentioned with his ancestors, his father, his grandfather, and grandfather, if there are. But after that, he's mentioned alone by his name. And since we know Pinchas, he was just mentioned. He was just mentioned in the Chumash. We know who he is. Why would the Torah mention him, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen? Which is sort of like a departure from the norm. So Rashi says, well, because the Torah wanted to prop him up, to give him kind of credibility, to honor him. Why did the Torah want to honor him? Because the people, various tribes of Israel, were insulting him and denying him his position. So that leaves us with the question, right? You know, why were they insulting him? What were they have against him? It says, we just read the Pasuk, that because he killed Zimri, the Magefa came to an end. So if the Magefa came to an end, they should all be thankful. Should all be thankful to Pinchas. Again, Bekano et Kinati, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, right? Bekano et Kinato ben Nikmo et Nikmati, he Katsvo et HaKetzev Shayali Liksof. He lessened the anger. Kolashon kina u mitchare linkom nikmat dabar. Okay, so in other words, Pinchas diffused a difficult situation. Right? That's what the pasuk says. So again. He says, "Kanoet kinati b'tocham v'lo chiliti b'nei Yisrael b'kinati." So the Torah says it quite clearly: the name of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hakadosh Baruch Hu would have destroyed b'nei Yisrael if not for Pinchas, if not for what Pinchas did. So why would Rashi point to the fact that b'nei Yisrael were insulting him, calling him names, reminding him of his less than illustrious ancestry? Right? Pasuk Yud Bet Lachein Emor. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said this most remarkable thing, Hineni noten lo et briti shalom, I am going to give him a covenant of peace. Now what a covenant of peace is, I don't know, but it sounds good. It sounds like something that everybody would want. And that apparently no one had until that very moment. That was like an invention for the sake of Pinchas. Right? It wasn't just that he would become a Kohen, he wouldn't do the Avodas HaMikdash, and he wouldn't take care of it, but that he would have Brit Shalom, Rashi says, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vaitalo Brit Zot, Brit Kunat Olam, Sha'afa Peshukwa Nitna Kunah Lezaro Shel Aaron, even though the Kunah was already given to the descendants of Aaron, Lo Nitna Ela Laaron Ulvanav, it was only given to Aaron and his sons, he had four sons, two died, Shenim Shechu Imo. This is like a bit of lomdus. It's only the sons who were anointed with Aaron who became the progenitor of a family of Kohanim. Shenim Shechu Imo, the Toldo Tehem Sheyolidu Achar Hamshachatan. So only they and their children would be Kohanim. Aval Pinchas Shenolad Kodem Lachen. Lo nimshach, but Pinchas, who was born earlier, he was not anointed. He was not anointed. Lo ba'lechal kuna adkan. He became a kohen at this moment. V'chein shanim v'zvachim lo nitkahem Pinchas ad sheharagol lezimri. That somehow Pinchas, the Gemara says that Pinchas wasn't really a kohen. I mean, he was the son of Aaron, but he didn't get anointed into the Kuna. The same thing is true about kings. A king is anointed, but his children are not anointed. They become kings automatically, right? The children of the king. Right? I don't know how it is in England, but that's how it is in Israel. So the same thing is true about the Kohen. The same thing is true about the Kohen. The Kohen is anointed, and his sons become Kohanim automatically, except that at the first time Aaron was anointed and his sons were anointed with him, but Pinchas was not around then, and so he wasn't anointed. So God gave him the Brit Shalom, which is another way of saying Rashi, is another way of saying Kohen. So we have a few questions. Yeah.
It says Pinchas Shenolad Kodem. Okay. Does that mean he was born before Aaron was anointed as a Kohen?
I don't know. I think it should be after.
Because Rashi says Kodem.
I know.
Oh, okay.
I try to skip over that.
I'm paying attention.
What?
I'm paying attention.
So I lose. Sometimes it works, you know. Because you don't always admit what you don't know. It's enough if you do it from time to time. Anyway, the problem, like, what's really going on? Do we have a clue of of the role that Moshe Rabbeinu is playing in this story and the role that Pinchas is playing? I think you have to make an assumption about Kanaim Pogimbo. You have to make an assumption. The problem with due process, over the board, is that it takes a lot of time and it doesn't always bring an accurate result. That's the problem with due process, as any lawyer or judge might be willing to agree to. It's hard to say that al pishnaim eidim, right? The Torah says al pishnaim eidim yakum davar. If two witnesses come and they say Reuven killed Shimon, it's a fact. Reuven killed Shimon. So if you say, well, why is it more of a fact that if one witness came and said Reuven killed Shimon? The answer is that that's true. And that the reason that we know that two witnesses can commit Reuven to the death sentence is only because the Torah said so. And if you learn Masechet Sanhedrin, you will see that it was obvious that the Tanaim and the Amoraim in Babel, the Tanaim in Eretz Yisrael and the Amoraim in Babel, were very unhappy with due process. And they took every opportunity to say that the witnesses, these two witnesses who came, Shmerel and Beryl, who said that Reuven killed Shimon, were probably not trustworthy. And they said, the Chachamim said, that we have an obligation, it says in the Pasuk, an obligation to Trishot and Chakirot, to investigate and to look into the witnesses. Well, what are they going to look into the witnesses? Was he wearing a check shirt or was he wearing a striped shirt? And if the witnesses can't agree about whether it was this kind of shirt or that kind of shirt, the witnesses have had it. They're gone. So you see that the Institute of Drishot V'Chakirot reflect the fact that the Chachamim were suspicious of due process, even though the Torah says B'feirush al pishnaim eidim yakum davar. There is no doubt that the same thing would be true about the halacha of Kana'im Pog Imbo. The problem is not that I don't know the halacha. I know the halacha. What I don't know is, am I looking at that case? For example, Kana'im Pog Imbo in the case of Bo'elet Aramit. What does that mean? Does it mean that the person who does it has to know that she's an Aramean? Does he have to know that he's doing it because of her connection to Avodah Zarah? When does the tipping point come? When is the tipping point of Kana'im Pog'im Bo? So of all the people who would find that directive impossible to effect, the number one person is, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu's commitment, that's how we understand, Moshe Rabbeinu's commitment to Emet, which is synonymous, a name, a word that is synonymous to Torah, right? You know that, which is synonymous to Tiferet. Right? All of these words indicate that the truth is accessible through the Torah. So that for Moshe Rabbeinu, whose knowledge of the Torah was the most exquisite, the most profound, the clearest, right, as the Rambam says, and the Ramban says, that the Moshe Rabbeinu's view of Torah was the clearest of anyone's, and therefore, his commitment to the Torah of truth was the greatest that you could imagine. So that the halakha of Kana'im Pog'im Bo, which presents a difficult vision of things. Is it or is it not? Should we or should we not? That kind of situation was one that Moshe Rabbeinu could not navigate. He could not accept. He could not accept that the Torah would mislead him, that he would be mistaken about the way he did it. However, the Torah is also an inheritance. It's something that comes along, it goes on through the generations. And through the generations we understand that not everybody is Moshe Rabbeinu. People are going to be able to make the decision, perhaps because they have less clarity, not because they have more clarity. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Pinchas, if you see it, then you do it. If you see that the halacha of Kana'im Pog'im Bo applies, then you do it. The reaction of B'nai Yisrael was obvious. What did B'nai Yisrael say? they looked and they said, look, Moshe Rabbeinu, he wouldn't do it. So how are we so sure that Pinchas did the right thing? I know that the Magefa came to an end, and they should have been able to understand that. But at least according to Rashi, they didn't understand. According to Rashi, they didn't understand what had happened. They saw Moshe Rabbeinu standing there, looking at the Nasi of Shimon of Zimri. They saw Pinchas, a young upstart of no particular past history of greatness. Pinchas said, didn't you teach us, Rebbe, you know, like, didn't you teach us that this is how you make coffee on Shabbos? Well, that's how you make coffee on Shabbos? You know, of course, the Rebbe just felt annoyed by the whole thing. So Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you told us that we should do this. Of course we should do this. Every teacher has had a dudnik like that in his class over and over again, actually. Right? You have to suffer. You have to suffer that. That's what teaching is all about, that nudnik. So the people said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you didn't do it. So what is Pinchas going and making an issue of it? You know, how did he push himself to the front of the line? So they started insulting Pinchas and saying maybe he was not, you know, not what he wasn't deserving of the credit that he got. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him Brit Shalom, which meant, according to Rashi, an extraordinary appointment to the Kohuna. Right? Even though he was the son of a Kohen, he might not have been a Kohen. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show everybody that in this case, the decision was correctly taken, and that the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not involve himself in this particular matter can also be understood. Okay, I think that is what I have to say. Have a good